Next, we have Rick Bostock, and he's going to talk about plant stress and phytophthora infection. He's a professor and former department chair at the Department of Plant Pathology in UC Davis.
You know, I can probably turn this on. You can hear me a little better, and I don't have to yell. He's also part of the, he was appointed as founding director of the Western Plant Diagnostics Network, which is a regional network of part of the larger National Plant Diagnostic Network. And he has been with the network for a while. In 2009, he was appointed the executive director of the network. There's a lot more here, but I'd rather hear him talk about what he's got to say. So.
Thanks, Jordan. Can everybody hear me okay? Is that working okay? I want to thank Susan Frankel and the organizing committee for the invitation to speak about some of our work. Some of what I'm going to talk about is really more the basic information about how phytophthoras seem to get a foothold in plants. Actually, I like the other slide better, but this is the title. And this is work that we did, got started with a few years ago. Actually, our interest in predisposition, the role of abiotic stress in predisposing plants to phytophthora infection goes back many years, actually about 25 years. We had some funding a few years ago to look at this in the context of phytophthora morum. So what I'll do this morning is give you a little bit of history about predisposition research in phytophthora. Some of you in the audience have worked in this area. I know Ted Sawicki has done work in this area and others as well. And then get into some of the work that we did with P. morum and rhododendron and viburnum. And then we'll get into some work that we're currently doing in other systems. So it's been well established, really through classic studies that were done at Davis and a few other places, the role of episodic wheat stress. And these were stresses of either water deficit, anoxia, salinity, all of which anoxia imposed by, for example, waterlogging. And I think all of us have kind of an appreciation of the importance of some of these in terms of how they can predispose to phytophthora root and crown rot. And all of the stress levels that can do this are routinely encountered in agriculture. Episodic stress, particularly in irrigated agriculture, can happen, and where you go through periods of dryness and wetness, and when things are rewatered, and if there's inoculum in the soil, the whatever basic resistance the plant has is compromised, and you get roaring infections. All of these stresses, whether hypoxia, salinity, and water deficit, all induce a certain amount of water stress in the plant. And there is a common response in the plant, which involves systemic elevation of abscisic acid, the phytohormone, which is really part of the plant's adaptive response to that stress. And I'll talk more about that shortly. This is a picture from some of the classic studies that were done at Davis. This is from John Dunaway and Jim McDonald, a couple of colleagues that have worked with me on this over the years. And you can see in the plot in the front there is one that is non-stressed. That is, it was given a normal irrigation regimen during the course of the season. These are safflower plants, by the way. And then the plot in the back there, which says stressed, basically had certain episodes of stress. That is, the plants were allowed to get too dry for a period of time, and then they were rewatered. Both plots had inoculum in the soil of phytophthora. And you can see that in the case of the well-watered, that the non-stressed plants, that they do fine. Whereas the plants that had episodic stress basically go down very severely. We've done this in more controlled systems. This is some work that we did actually about 25 years ago now in chrysanthemum. And you can see that in this system, these are with hydroponic plants, although you can do this in soil systems as well, of course. But in the hydroponic format here, you can see that the non-inoculated control on salted plants do fine. But it's only in the salted plants, those that experience an episode of salt stress, and this is a relatively mild stress of salt over about a 24-hour period, 16 to 24 hours, and you can see what happens. So again, it basically, these stresses compromise resistance, and as I said, they impair whatever basic resistance the plants have to Phytophthora species. And you can do this with a variety of different Phytophthora species. So this is not unique to any one Phytophthora. So where we got interested in this, in the context of P. ramorum, was, we wanted to see if this issue of root, there's a lot of questions about the role of root infections of the disease cycle. Jennifer Park and Nina Shishkov published a couple of nice papers about the time that we were also beginning to study this, and show that indeed, certainly in rhododendron, you could get root infections with P. ramorum. The other aspect of this that I think relates to how abiotic stress may play a role here is this problem of cryptic or asymptomatic infections, and the notion that perhaps stress can activate those. And so plants that might experience a transient episode of stress, such as what might occur during shipping, transplanting, or during an episode in the nursery where things go awry, could contribute then to infection by P. ramorum from soil-borne inoculum. And then, again, this is not without precedent. There was work that Jim McDonald had done a few years with Nancy Blaker, where they showed indeed in rhododendron to another Phytophthora species that soil moisture extremes, whether too dry or too little, and episodes of this could certainly compromise resistance to that. So these were experiments then that we did. We had a little bit of funding a few years ago from the Exotic Invasive and Pest Diseases program with USDA. And we did this in both viburnum and rhododendron, and the sequence that looks something like this. Basically, we would give the plants a pre-inoculation stress episode. Let them go for about 16 hours, bring them back out, put them in fresh hoglins, let them recover, and then inoculate with zoospores, and then evaluate over a period of time. And this is what we saw. So with rhododendron, again, the same kind of pattern that you see, say, with chrysanthemum and other plants that we work with. And so you can see within 1 week after inoculation, we can see very severe symptoms. And yet the plants that were salted but not inoculated do seem to do fine. And we could do this with, as well as with viburnum. Again, these are, we can do the rhododendron works well in both a soil format as well as in a hydroponic format. We're interested in the hydroponic because it gives us a little more control and it's much more consistent in that format. Viburnum works with hydroponic, but not so much in the soil. Viburnum is a little bit more recalcitrant to the kinds of experiments that we are trying to do here. But nonetheless, you can see it also in another species. And then this shows you some of the data that I'll quickly go through some of this. This is work that we recently we published in last year in Plant Disease. And basically, you can see that these infections do catch up if you give them enough time. It's not that this is an all or none kind of phenomenon by any means, although in other species, I will say that you can look at cultivars of plants that have a fairly good resistance to a given Phytophthora, and if you give them a little bit of stress, they will go down. It will, like I said, it'll break basic resistance. So it would be interesting to see how other rhododendron cultivars would respond or not. So inoculum density here also is important to see the predisposition effect. You can overwhelm it. This experiment was done to show if you give a post-inoculation stress, in other words, the idea was if you have perhaps a cryptic infection, can a stress episode activate these infections? And indeed, you can see this as well, particularly with the very low inoculum level of 10 to 2 zoospores per mil. So where we're interested too in all of this is the role of abscisic acid. As I mentioned, the ABA is a very important regulator of response in abiotic stress responses in the plant. Concentration is, elevates in roots and shoots very rapidly within minutes of a stress episode. And I said ABA is part of the osmotic adaptation and water balance. It's there to host stomates. It's there to increase hydraulic conductivity. It's there to also alter root shoot to root ratios. And with this, I can kind of jump to the quick here, is that ABA can basically substitute in the systems that we've studied, substitute for the salt stress. With ABA, it has very profound effects on the metabolism of the plant with gene expression, impacts other networks, and one in particular that I think is actually a couple here that are interesting is particularly SA or salicylic acid, which is involved in induced resistance responses in plants. So we think that the duration and intensity of the ABA response is very important here. Just let me say too that ABA's role in resistance and susceptibility in plant microbe interaction is an area of increasing, it's like become the hormone of the year in the past couple of years with a lot of work that's going on in this and other systems. So we are looking at this in other systems. We can do this in tomato, which is a very good model for this. We can do it in Rhabdopsis, which has certain benefits. And as I said, you can substitute ABA for the salt in there. So these are some experiments that I'll show you with tomato. And what this shows you is some of the time courses involved in how fast this response can occur. We can get a 6-hour episode, for example, is sufficient to predispose plants to Phytophthora, in this case, to Phytophthora capsicae in tomato. And this stress effect can persist up to 24 hours. So if you allow the plants to recover, it takes up to about 24 hours before you see the stress effect decline. One of the other reasons that we use some of these other systems for our research is because the availability of various mutants. And here we show that ABA is a very strong response in roots, goes up very quickly. It basically precedes or temporally parallels the predisposition effect. And secondly, if you take mutants that can't make ABA in response to the stress, they are not predisposable. So that shows, again, this very strong connection between ABA and susceptibility. And we can use ABA, coming back to P. remorum in rhododendron, we can use ABA to at least partially mimic the effect of the salt effect that we see. So we're looking at this in a variety of ways. I don't have time to get into this, the reason I present this is that we are looking at this in other systems in a more comprehensive way, but also trying to bring certain aspects of this back now to the P. remorum situation in ornamentals. One thing, for example, with infection biology, like chemotaxis, we can do some interesting things with this. If you take and do a zoospore motility choice assay, where we take a root exudate from stressed and non-stressed roots, we can put these into a little microcapillary tube, and in the center there you have a droplet of zoospores, and the zoospores will swim into one of these capillaries, and you can show, for example, that from salted roots, the exudates are very, very attractive to zoospores, whereas from the control roots, they're not as attractive. So, to summarize then, we have basically, again, brief episodes of abiotic stress. I mean, these are episodes of maybe of a few hours can impair basic disease resistance mechanisms in both roots and shoots. I didn't show any work with shoots, but most of our work has been with roots and stems. And the other point I want to emphasize, the root stress impact is both on host physiology or the host response, as well as on pathogen behavior. There are aspects to this that also involve pathogen behavior, as you saw with chemotaxis. So what are the implications for? I think we have to be cognizant of these the stress effects. It can influence the knockdown thresholds that are necessary to see disease. It can impact the extent and significance of root infections in various hosts. Some hosts that we might think are actually resistant or may not be if they're given a mild stress episode. And in fact, some of the seed companies and their breeding programs do include a stress test, like waterlogging, for example, when they screen against Phytophthora pathogens. Again, it gets to the consistency and reliability of pathogenicity tests here. And another aspect, I think, is perhaps the efficacy of chemical treatments to manage disease. Will chemicals hold up, for example, if plants then undergo a mild stress episode? So we were delighted to learn just about a week ago that we got some funding, again, to work on this in rhododendron. And so we're looking, just very quickly here, we're looking at different other possible stresses here that might be encountered in a nursery situation and how that could impact the soil-borne and cryptic infections, primarily looking at rhododendron. Another aspect is it does root stress reduce fungicide efficacy, particularly with things like phosphonates and insignia, which may have indirect modes of action as well. And then a third aspect of this is can plant activators, compounds like Actagard, which basically harness the salicylic acid pathway. I'm not saying that induced resistance is robust enough to control Phytophthora diseases by any means, but perhaps in combination with other materials, we can show some efficacy with it. There is evidence to suggest that some of these activators, like salicylic acid and Actagard, can mitigate some of the stress effects, such as salinity stress and other species. So with that, just some acknowledgments. People have worked on this. Tatiana Ritsova, who's going to continue working on it. Matt Pye, Matt DeLeo, who finished his PhD with Dave Rizzo, myself, and is now a postdoc at Cornell, and some faculty colleagues there, some of whom I think you can recognize. Thanks.
We do have time for a couple of questions.
We think so. I mean, there's work done many years ago by Terry Breaking at Ohio State University, which showed impacts of nitrogen fertility. Gary Chastanger did a study also on nitrogen fertility I think the result of your study, Gary, if you're out there somewhere, was that it might have had a moderate effect, but not it wasn't striking. Is that correct? Is that right?
Yeah.
Again, though, the nitrogen fertility could impact perhaps because the combination of fungicides with the efficacy of those fungicides.
Any other? Thank you, Rick.
Thanks.